Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 25th of April. Our guest this hour has served three terms in the California State Assembly and is author of landmark legislation in California that became a model for other states and actually for other countries, the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006. She's also author of the first regulations on vehicle carbon dioxide emissions. 11 other states in this country and Canada modeled their laws after her clean car regulations. She received the 2006 California League of Conservation Voters Global Warming Leadership Award, along with former Vice President Al Gore. And Fran Pavley is speaking tonight, or actually this afternoon. It's a free public lecture at the University of Wisconsin Memorial Union, Leading the Way on Climate Change. She has a master's degree in environmental planning. She was a middle school teacher for almost 30 years. She is currently running for state senate, or I believe will soon make that announcement. She raised four guide dogs as well, and She doesn't take credit. She'll give credit to other people to make sure that legislation gets through. So we're really happy to talk with Fran Pavley this hour and welcome your phone calls for her. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Should you be joining us today in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Fran. Thank you so much for being with us. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Fran. Thanks so much.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. You talk about we're not in a phase of a passing environmental fad. All of the issues, you say, have come together to galvanize mainstream America to address the most important environmental and economic issue of the century. It's almost a revolution. It took a long time to get there, didn't it?
It absolutely did. California's been working on climate change the last 6-7 years, and I would say it's been about the last maybe year to 2 years where we finally reached, at least in California, we call it our own tipping point, where the general public and the business community to a large extent understand that it's in not only our environmentally best interest to pursue aggressive legislation to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but it's in the long-term best economic interest of our state and our country.
Mm-hmm. Now, my understanding is that you were very new to the legislature and you maybe didn't realize how big a thing it was to pass this legislation, but you walked in and you knew something needed to be done about these issues, right? Right when you started.
Oh, maybe that's the advantage of being a freshman. You don't really understand the politics of the Capitol and the lobbying presence of special interest groups.
Mm-hmm.
So as a freshman, you know, taking on the oil companies and the automobile manufacturers was a interesting experience, to say the least.
Tell me about this bill, the first regulations on vehicle carbon dioxide emissions. What prompted that, and what bill was formulated by you?
Yes, that was one of my very first bills. That was the one I was alluding to. And what it'll do is require, it's a regulatory approach, require a reduction of emissions from tailpipes of automobiles by 30% by the year 2016, beginning with model year car 2009. And the reason California can even contemplate something like that is under the Clean Air Act, California has the ability to pass more stringent air emission standards than the federal government. We had sort of led the way in the past way before I was in office on unleaded gas or catalytic converters and a variety of other technologies to reduce air emission problems. California in several places still has a real problem with poor air quality. And so under the Clean Air Act, we have that exception or exemption on passing more stringent emissions, providing we get a waiver from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency.
Mm-hmm. And how does the Supreme Court ruling figure into this? The federal pollution regulators at the EPA must consider limits on carbon dioxide. Does that make it an easier road in California and other states?
Absolutely. That was a tremendous victory by the Supreme Court, a 5-4 decision. The suit was filed by Massachusetts, not directly related to the bill I authored, but certainly very relevant to it. Other states, including California and a variety of other states, joined in the lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency, who said that they do not have the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, including carbon dioxide. So the suit was filed. It was heard. Recent Supreme Court decision just a few weeks ago said that indeed the EPA has the authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions as typical criteria air pollutants under the Clean Air Act, and that helps California tremendously. I went back to Washington, D.C. about 2 weeks ago, and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and I myself met with Stephen Johnson, who is the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, and asked him about our waiver. We filed a waiver. It's usually procedural. California has been granted a waiver almost 70 times under the Clean Air Act in the past several decades. Unfortunately, it seems like not only he didn't have a timeline, but he was being rather evasive on whether this was going to be procedurally granted. Now, it doesn't require legislation. It doesn't require the president's approval. It just requires meeting sort of some test questions by the EPA, and it can be granted procedurally.
Were you instrumental in getting Governor Schwarzenegger to come along on a green movement?
I cannot take credit for that. He was part of the recall effort against our sitting governor at the time, Gray Davis, who had signed my clean car regulations bill that we were just talking about. But a good friend of mine helped the governor draft an environmental platform when he was involved in the recall, and the governor has stayed pretty true to that, especially when it comes to climate change and greenhouse gas emissions. It's sort of very helpful if you have a movie star governor who can get all the media attention he wants in the world to issue statements like the debate is over on global warming, we must address it, and he's very clear in his message that it's not a choice between the environment and the economy. It can be good for both.
Mm-hmm. And really makes it a very bipartisan issue, his prominence in all of this.
Right? And having a Republican governor lead the way on this is helpful politically. Governor Pataki in New York, also a moderate Republican governor, I believe gets the credit for putting together the REGI, or the New England States utility trading scheme that they have in place. So it's really only on the federal level that we see a lack of leadership on this issue.
Let's talk about the opposition here, and I want to know if it's diminished in recent times. A multi-million dollar campaign to prevent that bill from going forward, full-page ads, TV commercials, even Honda, one of the greener car makers involved in this. Why was there such a huge, huge, huge campaign to make this bill go down?
Now, this wasn't the recent bill, but this was the one you're talking about is my first one. In 2001 and 2002, I suppose it was a relatively different world out there regarding climate change. But interestingly enough, when the bill was going through the legislative process, the debate was not over whether there was climate change or not. It was simply over whether there should be a regulatory approach and a charge by the automobile manufacturers that California is just one state. You know, we have to manufacture cars for the other 49 states and other countries. But interestingly enough, today, under the Clean Air Act, other states have the option of adopting California regulations or the federal government regulations. And we now have 11 other states that have adopted California regulations, with a few other states through executive order, like the state of Arizona, also will be adopting them. So we're, the last time I estimated, way over 40% of the market share of automobiles sold. They will just be cleaner cars operating more efficiently, good for the environment and good for the pocketbook of consumers.
The Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, also a model for other states and countries, requiring industry to reduce heat-trapping emissions 25% to 1990 levels by the year 2020. Tell me how industry is responding to this. Do you have a fight on this regard as well, or are people willing to do this?
This was not as big a fight as that That first one. And yeah. That first one was an all-out fight. You're right, with the ads and the full all-out campaigns and commercials against it. This one, you know, we had a governor who said he's in favor of doing something about it. And he had issued an executive order saying his goals were to do that. And so what I did is take what he was saying and put it in statute. So the discussion through the legislative process was more how to implement it. How do we get realistically to 25% reduction by 2020? Now, most of us know that's not enough, but we realize that's a good first step because we've got to get policies and programs in place and then even go further than the 25% reduction. So this bill was interesting in that the last year we had many members of the business community supporting this bill. I had a whole list of environmental organizations and health organizations who are concerned about climate change and its impacts on respiratory problems and asthma, etc. But a lot of members of the business community who saw this as an opportunity for California to become the leader and the home of new clean technologies, to export them to other states and other countries. Studies done by some of our universities showing an increase of jobs as we transition from an old economy to a new economy. Our Silicon Valley high-tech business leaders in general were very supportive of this. They see clean tech as the next sort of big boom for business opportunity in California. Our largest utility, Pacific Gas and Electric, was supportive publicly of this. Many of the businesses that may surprise you were actually neutral and were talking to us about this, including BP, British Petroleum. They weren't opposed. They didn't come out in support, actually. But many of the businesses who were carefully monitoring this were fine with a cap on emissions and a rollback. They wanted to see, and eventually perhaps we will get there, more market-based mechanisms. That means trading of emissions credits. And that would financially make it provide more incentive for them to make these reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, where there are some upfront costs, but the opportunity for businesses to engage in emissions trading is very attractive to them. And the larger the business, the more attractive that is, because other countries in the world, particularly the EU, are already engaged in this.
And Fran, tell me, what is it that businesses can do? What are the biggest things that industry can do to reduce the heat-trapping emissions?
There's a lot of existing technologies they can do. Some of the easiest things you can do are energy efficiency measures. That means whether it's green building designs, simple things, you know, double pane windows, add more insulation, replacing of light fixtures, there's a whole long list of strategies. We're finding most new buildings are now being built with what we call LEED building designs because they realize that even though it might be a little bit more costly up front, they quickly get a return because they're saving money on their energy and utility bills. This is also true for schools. Schools have an amazing opportunity. Have your energy company do an audit of your schools, make suggestions on relatively inexpensive measures you can take to reduce your energy consumption. And we're finding several schools in California are saving quite a bit of money where the money's going into the classroom where it belongs with supplies and everything else that children need to succeed. So there's a sort of almost an unlimited list of things that could be accomplished from the building side.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Fran. Fran Pavley is our guest. She is now a senior climate advisor with the National Resources Defense Council and will be soon deciding whether or not she's running for a state senate in California. For the council has said Fran Pavley is one of the main reasons why California continues to play a leadership role on global warming issues. She brings to the Defense Council a fundamental commitment to the environment and to a clean and secure energy future. She's speaking this afternoon at the UW-Madison Memorial Union at 3:30, leading the way on climate change. She is the author of landmark legislation, the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, and also she is the architect of another law that would require automakers to reduce tailpipe emissions of greenhouse gases. Here's our phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we'll talk with one of the country's preeminent photojournalists who has spent almost 50 years taking pictures, many of those in the White House. He was the chief White House photographer for Time magazine and has, in his book, Moments in Time, pictures of the private and the public times of presidents of four administrations, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Bill Clinton. He also was the UPI Picture Bureau chief and photographer in Saigon. And he, as you can imagine, over 50 years has, and he's a terrific picture taker, has covered some very important stories. So Dirk Halstead is joining us the second hour of our program today. Fran Pavley is here now this afternoon. She's speaking at the UW-Madison Memorial Union, leading the way on climate change. And we're welcoming phone calls, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. And we start our calls with Carl from Shorewood. Hi, Carl.
Morning, Kathleen and guest. I'm wondering if the recent Supreme Court decision that the EPA does have the power to regulate greenhouse gases is going to affect the strategy in California. And another item, I also recently heard John Garamendi, the Lieutenant Governor of California, speak at UWM. And he mentioned that California was being sued by the federal government because over their tighter restrictions on emissions. Could you comment, please?
I'd be glad to comment on that. First of all, the federal government isn't suing California. The automobile manufacturers have filed suit in a few of the states to try to block the implementation of the regulations, and they've filed suit in California and Vermont and I believe Rhode Island, and not the other states that have adopted the regulations. The Supreme Court case is directly relevant to the lawsuit because one of the charges was that the EPA didn't have the authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate greenhouse gas emissions as air pollutants, and that was just decided by the Supreme Court. The other rationale for filing the lawsuit will determine, we know that the federal government is the only entity that has the right to set miles per gallon standards, fuel efficiency standards, we call them CAFE standards, and that is in the purview of the federal government. That's not what we're doing in California. They're going to charge it. This is essentially what we're doing, but it is not. We are controlling emissions from tailpipes, which California has historically been able to do for decades and have the ability to pass more stringent tailpipe emission standards. This is for the mobile sector than the federal government. So that's the thrust of the lawsuit. And I believe in Vermont this will be heard in the next few weeks, and California in the next few months. But at the end of the day, here are the not only the American automobile manufacturers, but the international companies have joined in with them to file suit, including Toyota and Honda and companies actually that can meet those reduction targets with their class of vehicles that they currently have operating. In fact, I want to make a point to your readers. This isn't a choice of whether you drive a pickup or an SUV or a smaller car. All cars in all classes of vehicles can be designed to operate more efficiently using off-the-shelf existing technologies that are already being used in cars around the world today, like more efficient air conditioners or variable valve timing, and there's page after page of strategies that are cost-effective and available. So in California, we're trying to launch a campaign asking the automobile manufacturers to send in their engineers and not their lawyers, because we know they can do this. And in fact, if they get out in front and start creating more efficient cars, cleaner cars, that will help curb pollution not only here in the United States, but those cars or those technologies will be used in other countries like China.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Considering the fact that Toyota and Honda are among the greener automobile makers, and actually Toyota now the biggest seller of cars in this country, why would they stand with the other automakers? Do you think that they would stand to benefit financially from this?
I've often wondered just that as I drive around in my Toyota Prius, but you would have to ask them that. I assume that they are just part of an organization, the International Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, and they've all agreed to sort of stay together on this one. You know, generally, they don't like a regulatory approach, and they want it voluntary, and I think that's why they filed the suit.
Hmm. And I know that it's under the purview of the federal government, but what about CAFE standards? Do you think that it is a matter of great importance for the government to address this? Would this make a huge difference in the reduction of greenhouse gases?
Well, absolutely. And I told Stephen Johnson the other day when I was visiting with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger that the federal government needs to increase the CAFE standards. And in addition, California and other states should pursue an aggressive tailpipe emission reduction bill. They're separate and distinct. And the CAFE standards for passenger cars really haven't been increased in over 20 or 25 years.
Wow.
And this, you know, Americans should be very upset about that, because the automobile manufacturers can create more fuel-efficient cars, and it will require the federal government to increase CAFE standards, and especially with the rising price of oil. We're very concerned about California. I was just in Madison looking at the gas prices, and they're less here, but still rising. And it affects the pocketbooks of all Americans. And also, mm-hmm. we're all concerned as a country on our dependence on foreign oil, implications with our war in Iraq, and we want to diversify our fuel supply.
Right.
Oil companies usually oppose bills that try to do just that. And we're very concerned about just supply and demand. We mm. know that with China and India and countries like that exploding in growth and use of oil, there isn't going to be enough supply, and so prices will go up. So we need to find a better way of doing business by diversifying our fuel supply, which is good for our economy and also good for air quality and reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Mm-hmm. Fran, how do you deal with, and this is a matter of money too, there are a lot of people who can't buy new cars very often. There are a lot of older cars on the market. There are a lot of people who drive cars for a long period of time because they can't afford new cars. How do you deal with the reduction of tailpipe emissions of all the older fleet?
Oh, well, there's a variety of strategies, and none of them are easy ones. We've estimated in California that 5% of our automobiles, and these are the older ones that predate 1985, are responsible for 50% of our air pollution.
Wow. No kidding.
We're talking about in the passenger fleet.
Mm.
You know, obviously, the big trucks and diesel are a big problem, but I'm talking about out of all the cars on the road, and we have 25 million cars, so way too many cars in California. So there's a variety of strategies. Buyback programs where, and this would be a government incentive working with the automobile dealerships, they purchase the old cars, and what's wrong, not what's wrong, but what the challenge is you can't give people really what that older car is worth because you can't buy anything with that replacement money.
Right.
So it's going to have to be several thousand dollars to get a car that's probably 1985 later model year car than that to replace them. So there is some proposals for money to be put out to work with car dealerships to purchase the older ones to get them off the road. Obviously, incentives to get people out of their cars, whether the older cars or the newer cars, and using more transit options is critically important. California hasn't done a very good job in investing in mass transit. We're paying the price for that. So it's not an easy decision, but somehow getting those older cars off the road is really part of the solution of this problem.
Our number is 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. Our guest is Fran Pavley, who is responsible for authoring landmark legislation in California, the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, which has become a model for other states and other countries, and also the author of the first regulations on vehicle carbon dioxide emissions. 11 other states in Canada have modeled their laws after her clean car regulations. She's speaking this afternoon in an event sponsored by the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. It's a free public lecture, Leading the Way on Climate Change, at 3:30 this afternoon. We have lines open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655. Mike from Oshkosh is next. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
I would like to kind of reiterate the emphasis on who killed the electric car. I think the electric cars were originally quite popular in California, and yet when... and I can't remember who managed to get some of the air pollution regulations overturned. GM actually crushed all of the electric cars that people had leased. Toyota was going to crush theirs, but they finally yielded to public opinion and allowed the RAV4 totally electric plug-ins to be continue to be run. And there are very few number of Ford pickup trucks that were totally electric. I would like to get your guest's thoughts on the totally electric car.
Yes, I'm relatively aware of it. It predates my tenure in the state assembly, and you're right. We had the in California an approach where a certain percentage of automobiles were going to have to be manufactured that were zero emission vehicles, ZEV cars. Those are the electric cars primarily that you're talking about, and for a variety of reasons, that regulatory requirement was deleted or watered down and made so that automobile manufacturers could comply with that requirement using not just zero-emission vehicles like electric car, but partial zero-emission vehicles, whether it's the hybrid technology that operates it at PZEB, the advanced technology, partial zero-emission vehicles or natural gas or other alternative fuels that aren't quite as technologically sound as electric, which is, you know, a pure form of actually zero-emission vehicles. I think you're going to see a renewed interest in going back and looking at that. We hear some interest from the automobile manufacturers. Frankly, if AB 1493, my clean car bill, survives the court challenges, this would certainly be a way for automobile manufacturers to comply with this by having some vehicles operating for the public purchase that are zero-emission vehicles. I think plug-in hybrids are going to be increasingly popular choice, and what we have to do is consumers have to sort of continue to put pressure and ask automobile dealerships, car dealerships, if they have plug-in hybrids for sale, and ask the automobile manufacturers to go ahead and produce them. I know they're looking at technology on batteries. That seems to be the problem right now, but they need to hear from the consumers.
Well, GM, I understand, with some government funding, developed this battery system that was ahead of its time, so to speak, and they have now sold some of these patents to one of the oil companies. That's my understanding.
I've read a little bit about that. You're right. It's the battery system and whether they sold them to the oil company. I'm not sure about that ending part of your comment, but that was, for a while, the only sort of problem on the battery capability, lithium versus whatever. I'm not a engineer mm-hmm. by trade, so you'll have to excuse my ability to articulate this any more clearly. But that seems to be the stumbling block. I did talk to Toyota about selling plug-in hybrids, and they said, well, you know, that's going to be a high priority with them. The battery seems to be the only limiting factor, and that they essentially wanted to get in the market because they were losing market share to so many engineers who, frankly, at home can convert their hybrids into plug-in hybrids.
Huh. Interesting. Thanks very much for the call, Mike. Let's go next to Paul from Whitewater. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, Paul. Yeah.
Hello.
Can you speak up? Your phone's real bad here.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm calling about the zero-emission mandate that the California Air Resources Board modified in 2003. And they modified it, and as a result, automobile manufacturers, and there were many of them, at least 10, that were able to take their cars, which were leased, these were electric cars, which were leased, take them back, and the majority of them were crushed. So what we look forward to, of course, are plug-in hybrids, which seem to be something the automobile industry would like to actually produce. But the problem is, myself as a consumer, I cannot get information to these automobile manufacturers to tell them that I want to buy a plug-in hybrid.
Mm-hmm. Fran, what should you do?
Well, I would assume if you can, I'm going to guess, Google all the corporate headquarters of the automobile manufacturers and send them a letter or an email. Other choices, obviously, would be your elected officials, city or state officials, having them send a letter or resolution on some noticeable letterhead. I would bet you would get a response from them.
Don't you have a sense that the automobile manufacturers are starting to realize, maybe Johnny-come-latelys, but they're starting to realize that there is a demand for these kind of vehicles now?
Yeah, that was always the discussion. They said, you know, it should be just voluntary and free market, and that the public wouldn't be buying these huge gas-guzzling cars unless they wanted them, and they don't really want more environmentally oriented cars or more efficient cars, or they're not that interested in saving money at the gas pump. I think they are getting the message, but your person that just called in is absolutely right. The public needs to request and actually demand that, starting with the car dealerships who are working on a commission to sell cars, and then work up to the automobile manufacturers and engage your public officials on the city and state level to send in those letters, and you create some momentum and visibility and your members of Congress on CAFE standards, quite frankly, that this needs to all be part of the solution.
Yeah. Well, they're also starting to lose money because they were behind the game here, right? Everybody still, these huge vans and SUVs and...
Well, our American automobile companies just gambled absolutely wrong. I think they were surprised. They thought, you know, it would be another 15 or 20 years. And, you know, obviously, the larger the car, the more expensive the car, the more money you make. And they just thought things would go on as usual and didn't see the high oil prices coming, let alone the instability in the Middle East and the supply and demand. And so we got way behind on the technology. And American automobile companies, I know they can do better, and we all want them to take a leadership role and export our products overseas instead of the other way around.
Thanks, Paul, very much for your call. We go next to Bruce from Bayfield. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I admire so much what your speaker is looking to accomplish, and I appreciate her speaking about what we as individuals can do as well as looking at what industry can do. I want to offer a brief comment. In addition to keeping the industry's feet to the fire, I believe that we as individuals need to take a position on our own responsibility. For example, the comment was made that we need to get that many of us can't afford new cars. That's certainly the case. But what each of us can do is make a conscious decision as to when we go to replace our car, let's try and buy a car that gets reasonably good fuel economy. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Fran.
Yes, well, absolutely. I think personal responsibility is part of that. Not only we're seeing in California, families that might have had two big cars now are turning in their one big car for a more fuel efficient kind of car, a cleaner car, because they care about the environment and they also care. They don't want to pay the higher gas prices. Also seeing in many cities, really working hard to improve transportation options, including bicycle lanes and pedestrian-oriented neighborhoods and downtown areas. And it's a variety of strategies. And obviously, the personal responsibility begins at home, and then it should be in your school and your workplace. And then there certainly is a role of government as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. Let's pause for a moment. Fran Pavley is our guest, and Fran is the author of landmark legislation in California, the Global Warming Solutions Act of 2006, and also author of the first regulations on vehicle carbon dioxide emissions. She is going to be speaking on leading the way on climate change this afternoon, 3:30 UW-Madison Memorial Union, and we're welcoming phone calls. The number is, for her now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the next hour of our program, we'll be speaking with Dirk Halstead. Dirk is, he covered Vietnam as UPI Picture Bureau Chief and photographer in Saigon. The bulk of his career is Chief White House Photographer for Time Magazine. So he has a book, Moments in Time, in which, you look at the presidents and you look at what happened in Vietnam, and he's a terrific photographer, so it's filled with extraordinary pictures. He will be with us. And then commentary of what was going on behind the picture that you were seeing. So that's coming up the second hour of our program. We continue phone calls for Fran Pavley, and we go next to George from Madison. Hello, George.
Hi there. Thank you. And Fran, I'll be listening to you this evening.
Oh, good.
I'm calling about supply versus demand side. Our governor, who's a Democrat, seems to be similar to George Bush in that all money should go to large corporations to try to find solutions. He passed a $40 million, or at least stated a $40 million budget for what's called sustainable energy or something like that initiative. And, $30 million of it is going to research by corporations, $10 million going to tax credits for venture capitalists. He wants to put 400 ethanol pumps in. Nothing on the demand side. Did you have that problem in your state? And how does one, deal with a governor that just wants to, make sure the corporations spend the money rather than try to get people to help people save energy?
And you'll be able to maybe provide some tips and suggestions for me on that. Well, when we put in AB 32, that's the Global Warming Solutions Act, one thing we did, and a very important part of it, is we set a cap on emissions and required reductions back to 1990 levels at 25%. By putting a cap on emissions, you are sending a strong signal to the marketplace, not just the large corporate entities, but all businesses, that California is open for business and for new clean technology companies and developers of innovative new products, that there's going to be a guaranteed market for you. I am hearing from small businesses and entrepreneurs almost daily on a new emission reduction strategies that they have, some really creative and innovative options. For example, cement companies are large greenhouse gas emission global warming polluters in California. There was this company that visited me the other day who has a new sort of a chemical makeup of a different kind of product instead of cement that's cleaner and better for the environment and perhaps will be a good substitute. So we're just seeing a unbelievable interest in those entrepreneurs out there to be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Mary from Duluth. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call. I tuned in late, so hopefully, if no one's mentioned this, it was just that recently I got a newsletter from Global Exchange in San Francisco, and I noticed that they mentioned that one of their ongoing projects is something called Adopt a Dealer, a car dealership, and I gather it's something to do with people taking the initiative to adopt a particular car dealership and demand that they start selling ASAP the kinds of energy efficient vehicles that people really want. And if you're not familiar, that Global Exchange was co-founded by Medea Benjamin, who's sort of the inspiration behind Code Pink and some other wonderful initiative. She might be a great guest sometime, but anyway, I thought that was interesting, the idea of adopting a dealer.
So. It is interesting, Fran.
Well, that's certainly a direct way to get your communication going. One of your prior callers in actually suggested that kind of approach on how do we get the message out there that the public wants more choices in vehicles and put a little pressure on the dealership, who will certainly send the message up to the automobile manufacturers. And so I think that's a great creative solution and one of many options the public can take. But don't forget Congress. I mean, they're going to be looking at CAFE standards. They need to get the message from the public that we need to increase CAFE standards federally. That way all states' cars will be operating more efficiently. It also will increase supply as we lower demand and save people money at the pump, and we should be demanding that of our congressional delegation.
Anything else, Mary?
No.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go to Bob from La Crosse. Hi, Bob.
Hello. My question is this. I was questioning the emphasis on plug-in hybrids, considering that most of the power in this country is produced by coal. It seemed that the plug-in hybrid would go a long way to reducing our dependence on Mideastern oil, but little for greenhouse gas emissions. And I was just wondering what your comment on that might be.
Well, you know, there's so many strategies out there. And regarding our dependence on coal, well, on fossil fuels, we have to reduce dependence on oil. We have to reduce dependence on coal. And those are the two big fossil fuel contributors, and that's where we have to target our impacts. One thing we're doing in California is renewable portfolio standards. 20% of all our energy use or needs are going to come from renewable sources, solar and wind and other sources. I know Wisconsin has a RPS standards that they're working on and a reduction by 2016. That is part of the solution. That's where you can replace our dependence on coal with renewables. Wisconsin perhaps has some potential in biomass, and other states are looking at that, especially in agricultural or forest regions. Out in California, we're looking at geothermal, and the mayor of San Francisco is even looking at tidal energy through San Francisco Bay as an opportunity. So our goal, long-term goal in California, is that one-third of all our energy will come from renewable sources, clean renewable sources. California also passed a law. We are not buying any more out-of-state coal on any more long-term contracts effective this year.
Thanks very much for the call. Thanks, Bob. Let's go to Ken from Albany, Wisconsin. Hi, Ken.
Hello. The last time we had CAFE standards on cars, the trucks were exempt, and that's why we have these big trucks on the road. And I'm wondering, have you put CAFE standards on everything so they're not able to do that again?
CAFE standards can only be imposed by the federal government. Of course, we were looking at tailpipe emissions in my bill, and one reason trucks were not brought in is because of the interstate commerce clauses. We cannot require trucks to operate any more efficiently than the federal government standards. And with NAFTA, we have the same concern with dealing with trucks coming across the border. One thing we're looking at is lower carbon fuel standards. We're looking at low sulfur diesel standards, cleaner fuels that operate in these large trucks. One innovative program that's going on in the city of Los Angeles is in our ports. We have a huge seaport in Los Angeles at San Pedro and Long Beach, and the pollution from the trucks was just becoming astronomical and causing health problems in neighborhoods and along the freeway corridor. They're actually upping the fees for people that do business with the ports and taking the money to either retrofit or replace the older trucks being driven that are operating in the ports. The people who own these older trucks couldn't afford to make the investment of buying a brand new truck, but here's a program that's going to provide the money to allow them to have a cleaner operating truck, either by retrofitting some technology or scrubbers in the tailpipes, or a brand new truck. So that was a creative solution, but trucks are part of the problem, where we need some, I think, a federal program that would provide, because of the interstate commerce clauses, some better ways to operate our trucks, or at least not on the diesel, which is so high in particulate matter. We also need a federal program to address other issues such as ships and particularly airplanes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. I know that a long time ago you were instrumental in starting some carpooling initiatives. When you talked about the 25 million cars, that's kind of stayed with me this hour. That's a lot of cars. It seems to me as though people could double up, but we're still in this mentality of our car is our castle in a sense. It's we do this by ourselves. We get on our cars and we go to work, etc. We don't need all those cars. A lot of people are going to the same place, but it's hard to coordinate that, and it's hard, I think, to come up with a different philosophy that we should ride in our cars together.
Yeah, well, California is not a very good model for the country on cars. I mean, yes, 25 million cars is a little daunting. Of course, we have about 37 million people. I want to point out that's more than all of Canada combined. So we have problems. We never invested adequately in mass transit options. San Francisco probably does better than anywhere. So encouraging people, incentivizing people to use either buses or mass transit or walk or ride. We do have what's called HOV lanes, high occupancy vehicle or carpool lanes on our freeways to encourage people to share a ride, to get into them. You need to either have two people in your car, or in the San Francisco Bay Area, they require three people or more, and then you have a special sort of faster lane, and it's benefit to air quality as well as getting cars off the road. I had recently carried some legislation. I was trying to incentivize the purchase of the cleanest hybrid vehicles. We had issued special decals, so single-occupant hybrid drivers with one person in the car could access our carpool lanes on the freeways. That was so overwhelmingly successful that we had limited the number of decals that could be used on the road to access the carpool lanes, because the primary reason for using carpool lanes was to get people to actually carpool together.
Right.
That someone told me the other day that if you have a decal on your hybrid, it's worth $3,000 more, the vehicle, now. And
woo!
But that's how bad the traffic is.
Wow.
That won't work in other states, and I'm not recommending that solution. But anything we can do to get people to carpool or get out of their cars would be the number one target, is beneficial to all. The other strategy we're trying to do in some of the urban areas of California is more sort of park and ride lots, facilitate the ability to people to carpool together.
Right. 1 minute left. Frank from Madison High.
Hello. thank you for your commendable guest. I'd like to point out that no new technology is needed for fuel-efficient, low-carbon-emitting vehicles. They just have to be smaller and lighter, and this was done effectively a decade ago. You'll be able to buy smart cars in the U.S. In the coming year, and they work really well. The second is, there's a gentleman called George Monbiot who's written an analysis named Heat of what would be necessary to reduce the carbon footprint to one-tenth of what it is now. And although he's a journalist, it's a very intelligent, cogent analysis.
And, what do you mean, although he's a journalist?
he's not an expert.
I understand. All right. Thanks, Frank. We'll be on that and try to book him as a guest. We're out of time. Fran, thank you so much for being with us. You're speaking this afternoon, right?
Absolutely.
All right. 3:30. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Fran Pavley at the UWM, or not the UWM, it's the UW-Madison Memorial Union, leading the way on climate change at 3:30 this afternoon. We did have several people call. If you want to register a desire for manufacturers to make electric cars, pluginamerica.com is the website for you to go to. Fran is the author of landmark legislation, Global Warming Solutions Act in California of 2006, and she also was the author of the first regulations on vehicle carbon dioxide emissions. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to Mimi Notstein for on-air production here in Milwaukee in our studios, and thanks for your calls, everybody. News ahead, will return with more conversation on the Ideas Net.